Good morning with KUAC News. I'm Dan Bross. The state announced 6 Alaska COVID-19 deaths Friday through Sunday. The Department of Health and Social Services identifies the fatalities as an Anchorage man in his 80s, a Matanuska Susitna Borough man in his 80s, a Southeast Fairbanks Census Area woman in her 60s, an Anchorage woman in her 90s, an Anchorage man in his 70s, and a Fairbanks woman in her 90s. The additional fatalities have raised Alaska's pandemic-long death toll to 83. Over the same 3 days, the state announced over 1,100 new Alaska resident COVID-19 cases. Among 347 new cases announced yesterday were 30 in Fairbanks, 5 in North Pole, 2 in Delta Junction, and 1 each in the Fairbanks North Star Borough, the Nome Census Area, and Tok. New case rates are currently the highest in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta, Anchorage, Kenai, the Mat-Su, and Fairbanks. The statewide average daily new case rate over the last 2 weeks has risen to nearly 45 per 100,000 people. In a video update posted Friday, State Chief Medical Officer Dr. Ann Zink said Alaska is standing out nationally.
And unfortunately, we're about third in the country when you look at the number of new cases per capita.
As of yesterday, there were 80 confirmed COVID-19 patients in Alaska hospitals and another 18 awaiting test results for a total of 98. That's up from 58 a week ago. Dr. Zink urged Alaskans to take action so as not to overwhelm hospital capacity.
So we all need Alaskans' help right now. First of all, masks work. They reduce the rate of infection between 50 to 70%.
Dr. Zink also asked that people reduce close contact with those outside their immediate family.
This is not the time for parties. This is not the time for gatherings. We need everyone to pull back their social contacts.
Dr. Zink said anyone feeling sick should get tested, but otherwise stay home. She noted that the number of tests being processed has slowed result turnaround times, but that a new commercial testing lab is in the works. With virus cases on the rise, the Delta Greeley School District has closed schools to students, and Delta Junction has closed its city hall and library to the public. Both city and school district officials say the closures will remain in effect for at least 2 weeks. A news release issued by the Delta COVID-19 Incident Management Team says, as of Saturday, there were 25 active local resident COVID-19 cases in the community. Delta Mayor J.W. Musgrove says city staff will continue to provide as many services as possible via telephone and email. Delta Greeley School District Superintendent Sean Striley says in a letter to parents Friday that in-class instruction will continue only at the small school in Gersel River, south of Delta. A record $1.4 billion has been channeled into Alaska by the Small Business Administration this year. Two coronavirus mitigation programs, the Paycheck Protection and Economic Injury Disaster Loans, dwarf lending usually handled by the SBA. As KUAC's Robin reports, now businesses are looking for the loans to be forgiven.
The Federal CARES Act and the loan programs developed quickly through the spring and summer, and by August, 12,000 Alaska businesses and nonprofits received money from the Paycheck Protection Program, or PPP. These are forgivable loans designed primarily to keep people employed at businesses impacted by the pandemic, but it only covered 2.5 months of payroll.
Everyone that received their PPP loans and now their cover period, the time frame on when they're supposed to use those PPP funds are coming to an end. So a lot of businesses now are going into the next phase, which is the forgiveness part.
That's Clark Behog, the senior area manager for the Small Business Administration. He's been busy with weekly webinars in Fairbanks on how businesses should fill out paperwork for forgiveness of the Paycheck Protection loans. The webinars have become popular.
The webinar is actually open to anybody. In fact, we get a lot of people registering from out of state. We got a lot of good feedback from our attendees.
Behog says he's offering the PPP forgiveness webinar every Wednesday until demand slows down. Registration information is on the Greater Fairbanks Chamber of Commerce website, fairbankschamber.org. As COVID-19 case numbers go up, Behog says he's hearing from businesses every day who are looking for more assistance. But without another federal relief package, there's no more PPP money.
The pandemic has impacted all industry, but the ones that we hear quite a bit are retail, the restaurant industry. And then I speak with a lot of people from the fishing industry here in Alaska too.
Bihag says he helps businesses find other programs offered by the SBA, including EIDL, the other program for the pandemic. Nearly 18,000 Alaska businesses have received either the Economic Injury Disaster Low Interest Loans, the EIDL, or the EIDL Advance of $10,000. SBA also has a regular menu of business loans for established and new business ventures, even in the midst of the pandemic.
At the same time, there's this one group struggling to keep the doors open. And then there's another group, another wave of people who want to start up their businesses. With any sort of adversity, you know, people find opportunities.
In Fairbanks, I'm Robin.
Army officials have begun the process of deciding whether to repair or replace Fort Wainwright's aging heat and power plant. They're asking the public to weigh in on four proposed solutions laid out in a draft environmental impact statement. KYC's Tim Ellis reports.
The draft EIS released last month says several malfunctions in recent years have knocked the 20-megawatt plant offline and left Fort Wainwright without heat. But the document says unreliability is only one of the reasons the Army's proposing to upgrade or replace the plant, which has been operating for 65 years now, about 30 years longer than it was designed to run.
I am told it is now the oldest coal-fired power plant in the United States, still in operation.
Jeanette Meyer is chief of the Post's Directorate of Public Works Operations and Maintenance Division, and she says upgrades over the years have kept the plant running and in compliance with state and federal regulations. But in order to keep its emissions from exceeding air quality regs, Post officials have had to throttle it back to run at the very inefficient rate of 42% of capacity. The draft EIS says that's one of the reasons why the plant is one of the Army's most expensive to operate. But Meyer says the facility would be upgraded to run more cleanly and efficiently if the Army decides to keep it in operation.
All alternatives will meet all regulatory requirements, no matter what action alternative is chosen.
The draft EIS says that so-called no action alternative would require up to $235 million of major repairs and upgrades, far less than the cost of one alternative that calls for building a new coal-fired power plant, which is estimated to cost $687 million.
The environmental impact statement looks at a number of factors when it analyzes the proposed action.
Those other factors include low upfront cost and the ongoing expense of operations and maintenance, as well as socioeconomic and environmental issues and military-specific considerations, like what the draft EIS calls fuel source resiliency.
Army redundancy requirements for fuel sources.
The document says that factor is met by the so-called dual-fueled alternative that could run on natural gas or diesel. That project is estimated to cost $363 million. The least expensive of the alternatives, the $117 million proposal to build facilities that would only generate heat and then rely on Golden Valley Electric Association for power. That alternative calls for construction of several natural gas-fired boilers located around the post and placement of diesel-fired generators to back up both the electrical power and heat systems. The 462-page draft EIS includes detailed information on each alternative. Laura Sample, the post official who oversees the EIS process, says the Army's encouraging the public to check out the document and submit comments on it before December 9th.
There are multiple ways you can submit comments. You can do so through our website. You can do so through the project email. You can send us a letter, and then you can call in during the public meeting.
The telephonic meeting scheduled for next Monday also can be accessed online. Reporting from Delta Junction, I'm Tim Ellis.
And I'm Dan Bross.